Sermons from the Journey is the audio podcast of the weekly message preached by Reverend Becca Gorell, pastor at Lebanon United Methodist Church in Lebanon, New Hampshire, and blogging at pastorbecca.com. Thanks for listening.
A couple weeks ago, we took Ariana to camp at Covenant Hills, the United Methodist and United Church of Christ camp in Vermont, right? Some of you are familiar with that. And it's a bit of a hike, a bit of a trek up there. And we were bringing both Ariana and William in the car to go up to camp to drop Ariana off. And Sean very cleverly packed snacks in the car for the way there and the way back, right? He was thinking ahead. I often do that, but we did need them, and we did need the goldfish crackers. We were okay on the way there. It was the way back that was the problem, and Will got hungry, and we got hungry. And we ate the baggies of goldfish crackers that he'd packed in advance. That's one of those things that parent types do. I'm known to have a snack just kind of hanging out in my purse or my office drawer in case a kid gets hungry or I get hungry. You never know when you're going to need a little baggie of goldfish crackers. And that's just one of the things that we do. We plan ahead. And we've got stores and all kinds of resources all around us at the drop of a hat most of the time. Maybe except when you're traveling to Cabot, Vermont for the afternoon and back. But most of the time. The people in Jesus' day were no different, except that their resources were more sparse. There weren't convenience stores around every corner, and they weren't driving in their cars so that they could easily make a side trip or go out for more. And so people would go out for the day. Let's say you were traveling and you wanted to go hear that new rabbi that was all the rage and people were talking about. You might pack some food for yourself and your family to bring with you. That's not unreasonable. You carry your food with you. You carry your water with you. It's a thirsty world out there. And so I imagine that a lot of the folks who showed up that day to hear Jesus, to seek healing from him, and to hear his teachings, they might have been carrying some food with them for themselves, for their families, those 5,000 households. We say it was 5,000 people, but it wasn't. There are 5,000 men, it's very specific, plus women and children. So 5,000 households, let's say, whether that's a household of one or 15, we don't know. And so some of those folks might have had some food with them, but I bet some of them didn't. Some of them might have heard as people were passing by that this rabbi, this healer, was going to be, in a field somewhere. He was kind of seeking out a deserted place after a lot of hubbub surrounding himself and his followers and the followers of John the Baptist, and who'd recently fallen into trouble. And so they heard that he was going to be nearby, and they wanted to hear what he had to say, or they or someone in their family needed healing, and so they went rushing out the door without preparing in advance, without packing any snacks for themselves and their family, because they were so hungry for what else Jesus had to offer that they didn't have time to worry about temporal things like food, and so they went rushing after him to hear what he had to say, to seek healing. And here's poor Jesus trying to have some alone time. But this crowd of people surrounds him, and he has compassion. I love that translation so much more than pity, because that's really what it is, compassion. Feeling with people, suffering with people. He has compassion on them, and so he heals them, and he teaches them. And this seems to draw on and on into the day, right? You always think that your message is very brief, and then you get going, and it's longer than you think it's going to be. I can hear that. You always think that there's just one more person that you're going to help, just one more, and then there's another person behind them, and how can you say no? And so this draws on into the evening, and it's getting late, and now we have a crowd of people who are starting to get hungry. We're Methodists. We know that's a bad thing. We don't want a crowd of people to get hungry. It's very important to feed this group of people. They've been fed spiritually, they've been nourished, they've had their concerns heard and tended to, they've been touched by a healer, their hearts have been touched by a message, and they're starting to be transformed, but when it comes right down to it, a crowd of hungry people is a crowd of hungry people. And so the disciples, very practical, very pragmatic disciples, say to Jesus, send them away so that they can go get food. We're out in the middle of nowhere here. The nearest convenience store isn't for several miles. They need some time to go walk to get food. And Jesus says, you feed them. And the disciples say, well, all we have are these 5 loaves of bread and 2 fish, which I think was meant to be their dinner, their food for that group of 13 people. I hope those are 2 big fish. But they were going to feed 13 people with 5 loaves of bread and 2 fish. That's dinner, right? And so Jesus says, give it to me. And he blesses it and he shares it. People in Jesus' time aren't so different from us. And those 5,000 households gathered together probably had between them enough to feed one another. But they weren't going to share it with each other. It's their food that they packed for their family. And if that poor sop over there didn't think on their way out the door to pack food for his family, that's not my problem. They go hungry because I have my food. Right? There's not really anything abnormal about that way of thinking. That's how people tend to think. What if by sharing, they ended up with not having enough to feed their own family? And then they've done an injustice to their own loved ones. And so they're not gonna go there. But then Jesus does this remarkable thing, trusting only in the abundance of God, which is a radical idea. Trusting only in the abundance of God, he takes the food that he and his household, his disciples, have to share between the 13 of them. And he says, God, I know you're going to do something amazing here. And he starts passing it out to them. He starts sharing that with them. And something remarkable happens. Now, do the loaves and fish multiply so that there are enough for everybody? Maybe they do. What a miracle. All are fed. Just as all were fed spiritually, now all are being fed physically. What an amazing thing. Do the people gathered there reach into their sacks and bags and start pulling out the food that they have too so that they can share it? Perhaps they do. And that's a miracle too. No more, no less, in my opinion, a miracle than if and when loaves and fishes multiply. At least one miracle happens, but I think there's more. I think many miracles are happening in this place. I think not only are loaves and fish transformed, which is exciting and amazing, but I think people are transformed, and that is truly remarkable. And if this starts to sound a little familiar, just as it starts to sound familiar when Jesus takes the bread and the fish and blesses them and breaks them and gives them to his disciples, then maybe it also sounds familiar that when I say if a miracle takes place in the bread, that is powerful and is of God. And when a miracle takes place in the transformation of people, no less so, that is truly a miracle. All are fed. All are fed, at least in addition to the multiplication of loaves and fishes. There's a transformation in the hearts of the people gathered. From a loose crowd of individuals fearfully holding on to their own resources to a sharing, loving, abundantly living community open to the wonder of God's presence and provision. And their own provision, and how all can be filled, and all can be held, and all can be healed, and all can participate, and have more than enough. That is the ongoing miracle of the presence of Christ. It's not just about being fed in our bellies. We are transformed from those who think primarily about ourselves and our own needs, or those who see primarily the 2 fish and the 5 loaves of bread and the crowd of thousands, to those who are understanding and living out our interconnectedness with one another, and those who are trusting in God's abundance instead of counting our own resources and worrying about the scarcity we see there. We are forever changed. Those having come hungry for teaching and healing and connection and for bread, and having been filled with the fullness of God's presence and with the abundant blessing of life together, connection with one another. We go away with our bellies and, more importantly, our hearts filled, our baskets overflowing with the goodness of God, of Christ in our connection. And in that, we become one body, one family. We become a community. I saw a little piece of this last week when we gathered together for praise in the park. And maybe it's because I don't know everyone, but when we all piled into the congregational church because it was pouring buckets, or was about to, and thankfully we were all inside by the time that happened, and when we all gathered into the congregational church, I mean, I recognize the people that I know. Some of us, some of you, not all of you yet. But I didn't know, by and large, who was from what church and who was sitting where. And I don't think that people kind of separated out by row or by section. But we were one community. And in worshiping together and coming together, some of those differences faded away for a moment. Not like we're going to suddenly stop being United Methodists. We're United Methodists and proud. But we were one body. We were sharing the resources that we have, the financial resources so that and the material resources of food to give to the food pantry at the Baptist Church to feed our neighbors here, to feed one another, to share what we have to feed one another. And our worship resources, our spiritual resources, our singing, our prayers, our preaching, our praying, all together. We were sharing those resources together and we became a community. In a way that perhaps we weren't in that specific group before. That's what the presence of Christ can do. And that's what happens every time we share in communion together. Yes, we're remembering the acts of God in Christ, as we say. We're remembering the miraculous presence of Jesus in a specific time and place, but we are also proclaiming and experiencing the presence of Christ here and now, and that's a presence that doesn't work a miracle in bread alone, but transforms the hearts of people, transforms us from individuals with our disparate worries and concerns and struggles that have come into this place, into a family, into one body, into a community of people, so that we leave with our bellies full, but also with our hearts filled to overflowing with the baskets of boundless grace that God has given us. We are transformed from those who worry about not having enough to those who open our hands and say, "Oh God, take our lives and let them be given to you." We are transformed from those who think about scarcity and how we're going to make ends meet for ourselves to those who give thanks for the abundant glory of God's love. We are transformed from those who seem not to know each other, not to be in community with each other, by the encounter with one another and with God, into those who care deeply for each other, who cannot imagine life without one another. We are woven together as a community, stripped of our scarcity mentalities and given new hope in God's abundance. We're coaxed out of our holding on to our own resources into the joy of sharing. And we are molded from our individual selves into a body, into a family, into a community. Thanks be to God. Amen.